Hey, everybody, this is Eric Mueller, the host of The Eric Mueller Show. You're tuned into the podcast that explores what makes any successful person's inner clock tick by unlocking the most successful and impactful tools within their success portfolio. I'm joined today by Patrick Hines, a renowned technology leader and cybersecurity expert with a wealth of knowledge in Microsoft technologies, software development, network architecture, and enterprise security. Patrick has dedicated his career to helping businesses leverage security as a strategic advantage and protect their valuable assets. Let's head on over to the interview. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So I'm very excited to be here, actually. I give lots of young people advice, and maybe they'll actually listen this time.
Hey, I'm excited to hear it. I really think it's something I've never really probably thought enough about is when you're creating something cool, how do you protect it? You know, a lot of people are maybe scared of an idea, or they think someone's going to steal their idea. But we'll get into this episode, how we can protect it and learn a little bit about Patrick's military background, too, which I think is a really cool little unique aspect of you. But Patrick, before we really dive deep into that expertise in how we can leverage cybersecurity as an entrepreneur, we want to know what makes up your success portfolio. Now, if you're new to the show here listening, just a quick background on this. I look at it like an investment portfolio that is that compilation of your investments that lays that foundation for your financial goals, your investment goals, retirement goals. Here on the Eric Mueller Show, I want to discover how successful people like Patrick invest in themselves to build that foundation for their success. So Patrick, start us off. What are some skills or traits or habits or mindsets that make up your success portfolio?
So I had a formative experience. I went to the military academy at West Point. So there they focused you, whether you like it or not, whether it's conditioning, brainwashing, or just regular beatings, on accomplishing tasks, getting things done, things that matter. And so there was always an opportunity to do something that I knew I should do, but I didn't want to do, whether it's some push-ups or go for a run or study some Latin or whatever the task may be. There's plenty of opportunities to not do what we know we should do. And it's even worse when we can get away with not doing it, because life is pretty lenient nowadays. I learned early on that there's a huge benefit to doing things you don't want to do, even when you can get away without doing them, because you start putting deposits into the bank of your skills and your experience and your capabilities. And so the advice I give most people, and the thing that I think has contributed most to my success, is the fact that I really resist the couch potato gravity. I really resist the, I can be done now, so I'm going to be done. I go and study something. I learn something I'm totally not interested in. I don't spend 17 hours on it in a day, but I spend 15 minutes like learning a new word in a language that I should learn, but I'm just not that excited about. And it just keeps building, and it builds up to the point where you know more than most of the people in the room, at least about that topic, and that pays dividends. I'll give you an anecdote from this. When I first got out of the military after the first Gulf War, I got hurt just enough to get out of the service. I was a technology person at heart. I had already been programming. And what I did was I knew I was behind because I'd been to the military and I hadn't been deep in computers, but I'd played with them. So at the time, Microsoft was on the rise, and I started reading the bug list for Microsoft, which was literally the most deadly dull thing in the world. But I wanted to understand like what was going wrong in the ecosystem. And I would read it every day. And there were a couple of times where someone's like, oh, I got this problem with this printer and I don't understand. And I'm like, well, did you check that there's enough memory in the buffer? And I just spit something out that I read in this thing. And people looked at me like, how did you know that? How did you know that was a thing? You know, so it paid dividends. And to build up a language. I'm fluent in German. It helps me quite a bit with my wife's family. She's from Germany, and it surprises people. I speak Russian because I studied in college, and I still review my Russian so I don't lose it. I can't speak it very well, but I can still read it. Again, that can surprise people. So you want to prepare for opportunities by having these skills. Well, that takes a lot of time, but it doesn't take a lot of time at one sitting. And I know that's a very long-winded way of saying it, but the other thing that goes hand in hand with this is I really always call into question my assumptions. So in the military and in security, assumptions are what get you killed. Okay, so I'm assuming that Eric patched that server because it's closest to his desk. Well, I assume Patrick patched that server because it's, you know, alphabetically closer to his name. Whatever our assumption is, we have to check it. We have to question it. And by doing that, we learn in the process, which is also useful, but we get rid of the risk. And so there's cybersecurity ramifications, but there's also business ramifications. If I assume people are going to buy this thing because I think it's a good idea, I might go far down a road of a failed product. But if I keep asking the question, why would people buy this? Why? What about this is better than what they can get as an alternative? What if you question those assumptions, you get to failure faster, which we've seen all seen as a way to success. But you also you eliminate those risks. So those two things, I subscribe that people should spend a half an hour, 15 minutes, an hour, whatever they can spare every day doing something they know they should do, they don't want to do, and they could get away without doing. And that might be running. I know that doesn't apply to you because you're an actual runner.
Right.
But it applies to me because I love having run, but I hate running. And so, but I know it benefits me. So that you could even split this into the personal, like physical fitness side, and into the business and personal development side. Maybe you spend a half an hour a day or an hour a day. Half an hour is your workout doing something you should do. Maybe you don't like doing bike or whatever your alternative is, or swimming for the triathlon. And there's also the professional. Maybe you just need to do Duolingo. If you don't know what else to do, just learn another language. It'll help you with dementia, they say. It'll help you, you know, in a dinner party when you suddenly know 100 words in Gaelic, you'll impress someone that. And with apps like Duolingo and all these other things, you really can't go wrong. You got 15 minutes to spare. So that's the basis of it.
Yeah, that's extremely sound advice. And I think it makes me think, especially I thought about working out and I thought about running for me specifically when you said that, because doing the thing you know you should do, but you don't want to, and you could get away with it. I think of right now, like I don't have a race on the calendar right now. So it'd be very easy to not feel like you need to train. I mean, and it'd be easy to go down that rabbit hole of you miss one day, you miss the next day, and then all of a sudden you're running like once in a while.
Yeah. And that gets to discipline. So, and that's the gift that I got from the military. That's the gift I got from my family. You know, my parents were fairly disciplined back in the day. But discipline is something that it's a muscle. If you don't exercise it, you lose it. And so I found myself, there was a period of time, probably over 10 years, where I was out of the academy. I stopped running. I focused on there's three balls in your life, they say. There's your family, there's your health, and there's your career. And most people can keep two of them well-tuned, and one just sits in the corner and gathers dust. And so for me at that time, family and business were the things that I was taking time in, but my blood pressure went up, my weight went up, everything kind of on the health side degraded. And if I had the discipline, I could keep all of them pretty reasonable. And so I started fasting about almost probably 9 years ago. And I found the discipline required to fast when you're hungry is high. It's a lot. And I missed it. I missed the discipline because I had so much of it in the military. And so I've been using fasting as a way to have discipline in my life every day, even though I could live a more indolent lifestyle. I could kick back. I have employees who can do almost everything that needs to be done. If I get a contract, I could send it to the lawyer and have them read it instead of me reading it first and trying to figure it out. And so I've gotten to the point where a 24-hour fast is no big deal. But that wasn't the case in the beginning. In the beginning, I was dying at 11, having not eaten breakfast. And so it's these exercises of, can you do one push-up? No? Okay. Try to do one push-up until you can. And then set the goal the following week to do two push-ups. If you add a push-up a week, which doesn't sound like a big deal, you'll be doing 50 push-ups after a year. It's that kind of incremental, like, you know, get off the couch mentality. every commercial, do a yoga pose. There's actually a deck I found in Sedona, Arizona, of yoga poses. It's a card deck. And I had this goal. I was going to pull a card every commercial and do a yoga pose. I didn't. I did other things instead. But you have to keep trying. I had a person I was trying to help. They needed to lose a lot of weight. And I had lost weight recently. So I was advising them what I did. And they said, yeah, you know, I gained more weight. I said, well, what happened? Said, well, you know, I fell off the diet. And then, you know, the next month when I tried again, I'm like, no, not the next month. The next day, the next meal, you get back on. You have to just keep getting back on the horse. You don't take long vacations from the discipline.
Right. Yeah. I think that at the core of that, from what I'm gathering, let's just recap there real quick, Patrick. So we have the discipline to do the things you know that you could get away with not doing, but you should do, and not assuming. So those like kind of two pieces are kind of the core of that portfolio for you. And I think it ties really well into whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you're just chasing success in general. I think that's those two principles really are ones that adhering to would help you, I feel like, really, really in regard to any endeavor you're pursuing. Would you kind of agree with that? Like just in implementing those two could help most people.
I definitely agree. And to make the segue, they are critical in security, in cybersecurity, because if you change one of your passwords every day, then you'll have good, strong passwords, over time. If you wait, and you know, manana, you wait until, you know, tomorrow, Morgan, as the Germans would say, it won't happen. You have too many passwords. You have 150 passwords probably. If you just learn something new about how to make passwords better and you never apply it, it didn't help. But right. If you change a password every day with that new idea in mind, for example, my advice for people with passwords is the longer is better. A long password is far better than a complex password because of the way we attack them. And so it's just there's an old joke. How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time, I'm guessing.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. You got to start somewhere. You got to get into it. So for cybersecurity, you could get away without patching today. Probably you could probably get away without closing, checking your firewall today, but I can't speak for the weekend. I can't speak for next week. I can't speak for today either, because they're coming at you so hard and heavy. And so you really do want, it's like the zombie apocalypse out on the internet right now. Everybody's, coming after you. You just don't see it. And so these habits, discipline and assumptions, because when we do, one of the things that we do at Pulsar Security, for the most part, is red team. We come into companies and we attack them like we're China or Russia or North Korea or Iran.
Yep.
And when we do that, we find that most of the time, everyone assumed the way that we got in wasn't possible or was already fixed. It's that simple. If you challenge all your assumptions with security, in God we trust, everyone else we double check, then we wouldn't get in. And there are some organizations that take that to heart, and they're not impregnable, but they seem to be when we test them. There's only a couple of those.
And it probably kind of ties into that assumption piece of you assume that you're probably more secure than you are if you're a business. I mean, you think you've battened down your hatches and you're probably not able to, but I like that. It's kind of like that stress test of you come in and you're like, okay, we're going to basically pretend to infiltrate your system here and see what we can do. And they probably realize, most of them that you work with are like, wow, we didn't realize we were that vulnerable. Thank goodness. Yeah. We didn't have somebody like that come at us yet. And we lose a valuable asset, or we expose our customers' information and lose all trust and stuff like that.
If you can't challenge your own assumptions, which is very difficult, it's a muscle that builds up over time, as I say, then you have to work with a security partner. It doesn't have to be us, but you have to work with someone who will come in from the outside and check that your assumptions are valid or true even. We see this with news. People get in the silos of information, and you need to break out of that. You need to read things that disagree with your opinion. If your opinion can't survive someone disagreeing with it, it's not a very good opinion.
Oh yeah.
And so I don't want to get into the info wars or culture wars or any of that stuff, but I go out of my way to read things that typically piss me off because they disagree with me, but I'm looking for where are my assumptions wrong. I find that if the more extreme your opinions, the less likely you are to be challenging your assumptions.
Yeah, the further you are on one end of the spectrum, that's that you don't have as open of a mind either, right?
Yeah, Yeah, which is dangerous because it hurts you for business. It hurts you for security. It hurts you for relationships. We're now in a place where if someone's got an extreme view, there's people who won't. I know wedding marriages that have dissolved over this stuff. And again, let's keep it to the center value. If you're on the edge, you need to like think about where you might be wrong, because even a small misunderstanding or misconception can really warp the data.
Right.
And we're just swimming in this sea of, and in cyber, it's getting worse. So in our podcast, securitythisweek.com, me, Dwayne, and Carl Franklin, Dwayne LaFlotte is our CTO, and Carl Franklin, we're all programmers from way back, and we're all technology people from way back. And we talk about the news that's come up in the last week or so through a security lens. And we say, okay, well, this is a reminder that everybody should be patching, or this is a reminder that you can't reuse passwords for critical systems. And this is a reminder. And we basically use that news as a reminder of where your assumptions are and how you can fix them.
That sounds like a really useful podcast for people to listen to. I'll be sure to tag that in the show notes. And
I appreciate
you know,
that.
Those of you that want to improve your security and just improve your mindset, it sounds like, I mean, Patrick has a lot to share here from that mindset piece. And before we get really into the deep depths of what specific steps we can use in security to protect our assets as entrepreneurs, I want to ask you one last question about success, Patrick. So you've had experience, you know, nearly two decades at Microsoft, and you've had, you know, military experience, graduate of West Point, you know, Gulf War veteran. I'm curious to ask you about how your definition of success may have changed over time. Like, you may have had a particular viewpoint of success at one point in your life, and maybe it's now molded and shifted over time, or maybe it's stayed the same for you. Do you have an idea, if someone asks you, what is success to you, what would you say?
It's definitely changed in the last 10 years. So for the first part of my career, the song Fall Out Boy by Fall Out Boy, You'll Remember Me.
Sure.
The line, you'll remember me for centuries. That was kind of the goal. And I realized that's not an important goal. People who are living 100 years from now, I won't know and I have no connection to. I have grandchildren now. I think about how they'll think of me and how my life will impact, hopefully improve their life by building resources, setting examples, teaching lessons, giving them the tools so that they can be, capable and independent. My 11-year-old grandson fancies himself a survivalist, and I think that's because of me. I'm not a crazy survivalist, but then again, none of us think we're crazy. I'm a prepared person, so I don't have 5 years worth of food, but I collect honey and other things so that those are long staple food sources. I know how to build a fire, permit a fire. My grandson knows how to. And I just taught my 5-year-old grandson how to shoot a bow.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, I'm refocusing on like, how will the resources I build today and the lessons that I teach today help those generations that I care about? Because if my great grandchildren remember me, that would be wonderful, because that means I lived long enough to meet them and impact their lives. But I'm not going to know their grandchildren. And I'm not going to know their great-grandchildren. So the centuries thing is no longer, and notoriety outside of my corner. I've learned that the world is too big for me to fix all of it. I'm just going to try to fix my listeners, and the corner of people we can impact. One of the keys also is to not let money be the goal. Money is a tool, just like everything else. When I do things for people, sometimes I'm bringing the money. Sometimes I'm bringing the drill. Sometimes I'm bringing the coolers. You know, it's whatever we bring to the party. If you're in a position where you can bring the money, it's no different than the people who are bringing the time. And once you get up past that, I think that may be the Berkshire Hathaway, the Warren Buffett mentality. The fact that he still lives in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the same house that I've lived in since I got out of the service. And I'm probably never going to leave. Have we fixed it up? Yeah, we fixed it up, but we didn't add a heliport or anything like that. And so you got to stay grounded. I'll give you one last thing of advice that I found is, if I won the Powerball or if I came into a big sum of money, I would advise myself and anyone else, blow 10% of it. Go take 10% of it and buy whatever 10% will buy, whether it's a car, a house, or just, you know, a lavish dinner or a suit that you've always wanted or a coin you wanted to collect. That's just blow it. And the rest of it put to work for the future. because if you blow it all, then you just become another one of those, you know, people who they had a chance and they blew it. But if you blow none of it, you might resent your discipline, and you don't want to resent your discipline. You want to treasure it. You want to curate it.
Right. No. Yeah. I'm happy to know that it's, you know, shifted and stuff over time too, because I've noticed that with myself, and I'm thinking some of the listeners probably have noticed that too, with just the way they view success. And it's probably somewhat difficult going through schooling to not think about money as somewhat of the goal, because at that point you're probably taking on debt so you can go to school. So you're thinking, oh gosh, if I get some more money, like that might make me feel a little more happy, or you might be able to do more things. And a lot of that is true, but I think I'm starting to realize, and maybe you'll agree with this too, Patrick, is that as hard as it is really for me to say I'm doing it to a T, I think the enjoyment of the process is really where I'm finding out, you know, that's like the success part. And I think it's
the chase.
Yeah. And it's a little bit hard to explain, you know, probably to my past self, I would have a hard time believing it, and I'm not there yet, but just something like this podcast, or you're working on a business project, or you're pursuing another degree, you know, the end route to it is actually more enjoyable in hindsight than just having it when you're done.
Well, so, I do have a lot of hindsight being named Hines.
Right, Hines, yeah. Yeah.
So they say most of the endorphins come from the anticipation of something rather than getting it. And so that's another really good piece of advice, which is you have to know what your follow-on goals are. Because once you reach a goal, sometimes it's like, okay, I'm here, now what? And I've had anxiety about that. The only time I think I've ever really had anxiety, I'm actually a fairly low anxiety person, was when I was pursuing Microsoft certifications. And you said something I want to clarify. I worked with Microsoft for over 20 years. I was a Microsoft regional director. I was not an employee. I was a partner. I advised.
Right, right.
I've met Bill Gates, Satya Nadella. I've spoken on stage with Bill Gates in Egypt a couple of times. Actually, he was on the same stage. I wasn't on stage with him. But you know, it gave me incredible access to Microsoft and how what now is a $1 trillion company operates. And I pursued certifications, technical certifications, and at one point, I may have had the most in the world. It was never verified, but I got to 55 Microsoft technical certifications at a time that was unheard of. And I got to a point where I ran out of certifications to take. I literally was nothing of interest. And I kind of stressed out, like, what am I going to do now with the rest of my time? I didn't want to lose my edge of taking, you know, studying all the time and taking tests. And eventually I got my mojo back. But you want to have those follow-on goals. Like, okay, you want to have enough money to pay off your mortgage. Okay, what happens when you pay off your mortgage? Now what are you doing? And I think eventually you get to a point where it's like, well, how can I enable other things? How can I help people behind me coming in? You know, how can I give the money away? I'm not at, you know, the point where I'm giving away 90% of my income, but I am at the point where I'm starting to fund charities. So one of them is the Children of Fallen Patriots. One of my classmates founded that after one of his close friends was killed in action, and he realized his kids weren't prepared for college, weren't going to be able to go to college, and so they pay for the college of soldiers' kids who've passed, the Gold Star families. So I help support them. You know, my wife is near and dear, you know, animals, so we do shelters, we do you know, food kitchens, things like that. And so I think success also is when you get to the point where you've reached a point with the money that you're not worried about it anymore and you can start giving it away.
Right.
It's not about Porsches or supercars or any of that stuff. And I'm lucky, I'm not into that stuff. I don't drink, so I'm not looking for the $15,000 glass of whiskey or wine. So living Spartan helps. When I was a cadet at West Point, we had a commandant who came in, he jumped in with the 82nd in Grenada, made one-star general after that because he did a great job, General Boylan. And they interviewed him on the cadet radio, and he was absolutely he was big on discipline. He's changed rules so that it was very painful to break the rules. And he wouldn't let little small things, like you couldn't have a rug in your room, couldn't have a TV anywhere except for in the day room. And they asked him, they said, sir, you know, why does it have to be so hard? And his answer was very simple and is very short. He's like, you can't live Spartan in Athens. And so
oh,
by,
sure.
by being in a Spartan environment. And the person who came in after him, the commandant, wasn't a fan of ours, my class of 88, especially because at about 2 weeks before graduation, we had a big party that we weren't supposed to let get out of control, but it did. Like hundreds of beer bottles broken, furniture broken. It was a blowout rager that is not allowed at the academy. And so he assembled our class and said that we were the worst class ever.
Oh my
goodness.
Academy's
history. And so now my class went on to have more generals than any class since World War II. So we have 30, I think 30 is the official number of my classmates made it to general. And one of my classmates is the current governor of Louisiana.
Oh, wow.
And every time we get together for one of the 4-star promotions or someone taking a major command, we have somewhere it's written worst class ever.
That's awesome.
So you want to exceed expectations. You don't want to let anyone else judge you or tell you what you can or can't do. And if they do, just use that spite, you know? I'm sorry if I'm droning on too much.
No. Yeah,
you got me reminiscing.
Yeah, no, that's all great examples, all a lot of experience. I mean, I think that you've had so much experience that has shaped you into the person you are today. And with your current company, Pulsar, you know, Security, that you provide the service to businesses that don't know maybe what they're missing. And I'm curious to ask, you know, given we hear about, you know, high profile security breaches, and we hear about, you know, I think a while back there was, you know, like loads of information released that people, you know, like millions of people's data was released, you know, by companies over, you know, in the last decade. There's probably several examples. I won't name any names.
Sure.
But what are some lesser known security risks that entrepreneurs should pay attention to, and how can they mitigate these effectively? You know, some things that, is there like a specific example of even just one or two smaller things that they could protect themselves with and keep their assets secure?
So it right now, like when I told you about Children of Fallen Patriots, that's a charity that I support. I've given some information that could be used to try to fish me. And we don't think about that. I do, because that's my job. But every time I release information, I think about how could that information be used against me? I'm a little broken. I was an infantry officer. If I look at a beautiful picture of a pasture and a forest, I think where I'm going to put the machine guns, because that's how I'm hardwired. So I'm always thinking about, well, how could that be used against me? What's the vector? And so you have to understand, you can only be betrayed by those you trust, or those posing as those you trust. And so phishing is a big problem for everybody, because it's a social engineer. Social engineering is when someone takes advantage of the norms of society to trick you into doing something for their benefit. And so you might not see why, if you get a text with a phone number, there's no link there to infect your phone. They want you to call them. If you call them, then they're going to try to trick you into doing something eventually. So it's a long con. And so you have to like figure out what the long con is, and you have to validate. So if I encourage anybody I'm corresponding with, that if they get a message from me that asks them to do something that could be risky, like the link could be, if they're not absolutely convinced it's me, and they shouldn't easily be convinced, they should call me or text me or use another channel. Using an alternate channel to verify is the best way to break the ability for the hacker to trick you. It's also, multi-factor authentication is a similar strategy. When we use multi-factor authentication, we're causing the hacker to have to breach multiple systems that are completely disparate. And that makes it a lot tougher. It doesn't make it impossible. It makes it a lot tougher. And so we're surprised when we see, oh, multi-factor authentication was subverted in this way. It's because it's rare. We're not surprised anymore when X company, you know, retailer or whatever has been breached. That's old news. I can find 50 of those stories a week if I wanted to. We have to defend ourselves. For example, if you're asked by My Corner Hardware Store when you register for your birthday, don't put in your real birthday. Why would you give them your real birthday? It's information about you. Put in a fake birthday. Put in your favorite holiday. Put in, you know, January 1st every time. If a hacker gets a hold of that and then tries to use that at your bank, The bank's going to say, that's not your date of birth. What are you talking about? So there's some places you have to use the real information, and there's some places you don't. Security questions. You can have security questions where, you know, your favorite place is Martha's Vineyard. And so all your security questions, the answer is always Martha's Vineyard. What's your favorite food? Martha's Vineyard. What's your favorite city? Martha's Vineyard. Which sometimes they'll make sense and sometimes they won't. But it'll be harder for the hacker to gather that information. By the way, my answer is not Martha's Vineyard. I picked something that wasn't. So I hate to say it, we have to become a little more cautious, a little more cynical. Everyone's really good at physical security. You know when you're in a bad neighborhood and you're going to lock the door. You know when you should carry your wallet in your front pocket. You know when if you live in a place where you should lock your doors or not. Okay? You know that. You're good at that. You made it to maturity, so you must be good at that. We need the same kind of street smarts with cybersecurity. The problem is it's all a rough neighborhood. The whole internet is a rough neighborhood. And any bad guy can and will knock on your door or walk by your house every day. And so the more prepared we can be, the better. Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah. And it made me think too on like specifically passwords and creation of passwords. And you know, how would you approach this as both a personal and like a business owner? If they have, you know, they have their personal accounts and they have their business accounts. What if there is some overlap, or what if they're nervous about, you know, they have their business registered in their real name because that, yep, you know, they need to. Yep. But how should they approach creating passwords for all those accounts and all those types of securities?
So the first rule is you have to use a password manager nowadays. It's not optional. If you don't use a password manager, then you're unless you have an eidetic memory and you were willing to remember 340 character passwords, you need a password manager. So LastPass has given password managers a bad name because they had a breach and then they didn't learn from that breach and then they had another breach that was worse. But there are good vendors out there. And maybe some people would say, well, LastPass will be a good vendor because they should learn by now. I don't know that that's the fact. I hope that is. But 1Password is a good password manager based on our experience so far. Bitwarden is a really good password manager based on our experience so far. And there's others out there. And you know, you might be able to get a password manager from your bank or from whatever. There should be a password manager for you personally, for your world, your life, and there should be one for your business. And they should not intersect. And if I have I have a personal one and I have a business one. The business one is much higher speed. I can delegate passwords. I can have passwords changed automatically. And the thing is, if you do it right, you won't know any of your passwords. You'll know the password that gets you in. Conversely, one of the tricks that I've used over the years is many of my passwords are hints. So the password manager has my hints, but not the real password. The real password is not in any place except here.
Sure.
That's a bad news for my heirs. If suddenly I get hit by a train, they're not going to be able to get any of these systems unless they know my hint system. But there's different levels of you know, paranoia, security, things like that. Right now, most people's emails is their life. If they lost access to their email, at least my generation, and maybe your generation, maybe not. But that's how you recover those accounts. If you don't have your Gmail, you can't recover those accounts. If you don't have your phone, you can't recover those accounts. The world's moving towards passphrases and pass keys, which is no password at all. Your phone will be your password. The biometrics on your phone will unlock. And your phone will then say, yes, I can verify. It's almost like a notary. The phone acts as a validation that you are there and it is you doing it. Mm-hmm. We've all seen the movie where the bad guy just puts your face in front of your phone and nothing will be foolproof. It'll all have a layer of, well, what about? Mm-hmm. But we're trying to move our way up that threat pyramid. The threat pyramid, there's only a few actors who are willing to torture a password out of you or knock you unconscious and use your face, you're probably not going up against them. And if you are, if you don't have armed guards, you're done anyways. So if we live in the real world, longer passwords are better. The reusing passwords, very bad. A password manager is really the only way to survive those two facts.
And would you say for people out there that are very forgetful or people that have a lot of trouble you know, they get to a new website or they get to a website they haven't been to in a while and they think, shoot, I don't remember this password. I need to recover it. I need to change it. It has to be different than one of the last five ones I've used. I don't have any more ideas. Like, I mean, so having a password manager probably would help with that because
it definitely helps.
It's going to generate
a password.
Yeah. Generate a long one that you don't, like you just said, you don't have to even know that password.
Right. Right.
And
if you want to create a good password, depending on how long you want it to be. So you can look around the room and I see a nail. So nail is a four letter word. That's not a bad four letter word. I see, you know, one of those things that you pull the ball and it throws the other one off and it keeps going and forth. So ball's another good word. Those are two four letter words. If I can throw a number in the middle of a syllable, like B5, you know, I can add complexity, but length is far more important. And then maybe I have a zip code that I remember as a kid that I don't live in anymore, but my old friend used to, or the area codes of my three first girlfriends or whatever. And you can add a lot of length really quickly and you can give yourself hints on those things. It doesn't have to be, you just have to use it in a way that generates a longer password that you can rebuild. If you use a password manager, make sure you have backups. If you, and that password for the password manager, if you have to write it down and put it, you know, under the sugar bowl, so be it. You know what I mean? Again, unless the blacklist comes after you, unless it's Reed, what is his name? Red Reddington or whatever from the blacklist. Red Reddington. Yeah. Unless he's coming after you, he's probably not going to check under the sugar bowl, but you know what I'm saying? Physical security. I wouldn't have all of your passwords out on the counter or even in your junk drawer, but you need to be able to recover that password. Maybe it goes with your marriage license and birth certificates in a safety deposit box as an emergency thing. If you spend even, you know, that 15 minutes a day I told you should be spending that you could get away without, this is the kind of thing you should be investing it in, is your security. Learning more about password managers, learning more about password security, things like that.
That's actually, oddly enough, Patrick, what I was going to ask next was just considering like the dynamic nature of the threats that we have and technology just continuing to advance. You know, we now have seemingly this boom in AI and ChatGPT and all these things that are probably getting business owners and people alike just feeling a little nervous about the future and what's to come. I was going to ask, what role does continuous learning and adaptation like play in ensuring your long-term security?
It's so critical.
Yeah. What do you have any strategies of how to stay ahead of the curve, or like other than, you know, you go on YouTube and read about password managers or watch about password managers, or you listen to your podcast and learn about the more recent occurrences of security threats or how to prevent that?
I was going to say there's two podcasts, yours and mine, that people should listen to.
I'll get behind that.
That's not false. Listening to podcasts is a great example of something you know you should do, but you really don't have to. And this is an educational podcast. You're teaching people about ways to strategies. Now, it's also preaching to the choir to tell the people who are listening, but that's how it works. You know, the ones who are available for the message. YouTube is great. It'll show you what's going on. You can see, you know, Bitwarden, how it works by YouTube videos. You can usually get some good resources. A lot of companies are coming around and giving you that. You don't have to be an expert. You just have to be literate. You just have to be in the room and understand it. And if you keep building on that literacy, then eventually you'll get to some place where you'll know more than anybody else in the room.
Right.
And that's not necessarily mastery. I tell people when they want to get into technology, especially security, that you have to learn a lot, a little about a lot. You've got to learn pretty much all the terminology so that if you are hacking a system and you discover a file that says Kubernetes, that you know what that means and what that's about. You don't have to know how to manage Kubernetes. You don't even have to understand where it comes from, but you have to understand what that technology says about the thing you found. Otherwise, you can't apply it.
It's kind of like learning a language a little bit. If you could find this great piece of information on a topic that you love and it's written in Chinese or it's written in Russian or something that you don't understand or know, it's like you don't have the tool and the key to unlock that information. So that could be something that, you know, just continuing to learn about those things. And goes back to the beginning of the episode where we dedicate the time to do things that we should do, but we don't want to, and it's easy to get away with. So it's easy to just use the same password you used in middle school and just continue to reuse that. And I'm guilty of doing that, honestly, in some situations. So I've got some work to do. Don't hack me yet. I need to batten down the hatches here. But Patrick, as we close this up here, just I want to ask you with your company or in the past, before, you know, as you were working as a partner with Microsoft, what is probably the biggest success story that you've seen with someone that really fully implemented like new security measures, or a small business you worked with that had a situation where they didn't realize they were as vulnerable as they were, and they were able to make like a 180 turnaround? Did you see any companies do that, or is there any specific example of someone that you really think is like maybe your greatest success story?
So we've seen, we normally scare the bejesus out of everybody we work with. So we've worked with some very large multi-billion-dollar companies. That's kind of our bread and butter. We have a number of clients that are in the billions. But we also work with a lot of schools and really small companies. And some of that is done pro bono so that we can just like help them. And maybe it's because they didn't pay for it, but we did a really large school and helped them pro bono. And they really dug into what we said. And the ones who pay, we don't charge very much. But I think it's because we were willing to take the time and help them without charging them that they got the most out of it. It's kind of convoluted. Somebody who will pay hundreds of thousands of dollars will take the report and put it in the drawer, and they'll do things that we make them do. So one of the things that we've started doing way back that's also very effective is when we do a red team engagement, we actually invite and really want the customer to watch. That's not normal. That's not customary. There's actually a shortage of security people in the world right now. There's 500,000 unfilled jobs in cyber right now in the United States, and 3 million worldwide is the last numbers I saw.
Wow.
But
sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. Yeah. So we could certainly be more profitable by just taking the gig, generating a report in the darkness and sending it out. We could do less. But what we want to do is we want to educate and show them what they're up against. And usually that has a bit of a mind-blowing effect. In order to do that, you have to really be confident in your craft. You have to not have what they call imposter syndrome, where you feel that somebody, if I let them watch, then somebody's going to see that I don't know everything. And then they're going to say that I'm not worth anything. And it's very typical of people, especially new to the environment. And unfortunately, a lot of the people in cyber are younger, and therefore the imposter syndrome is affecting how they're delivering and what they're delivering, the quality that they're delivering. And so by having the customer on, we're doing training while we're doing the red teaming. And then when we come in again, they're better. And we still scare them again because it makes us better. And so, and we're spending all of our time on this stuff. So it's not like I'm an older person. Some of my team is older. Some of them are younger. And we try to mix that up because I'm not afraid of somebody saying, you don't know what you're talking about, because sometimes they're right. And I don't claim to know everything. I just claim to know what I need to know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, Patrick, thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you so much for the advice on mindset and success early on, and then on specific details of how we can be better secured, both as our personal and business accounts. We know you host the Security This Week podcast, so that would be a great thing for people to check out on the show notes. If someone wants to reach out to you and learn more, is there a best way to contact you personally?
LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. My business email is flooded. Spam filters are pretty aggressive. So LinkedIn's probably the best way to reach out. And the through the podcast as well, we do get some email, some messages that way, and other people will read it. So it's not as sentry. See, I'm giving away the secrets.
Yeah.
I'm giving away.
Yeah, right. Yep.
One last thing. I have another podcast that's a little bit edge, which is called Entangled Things About Quantum Computing. Okay. And so I reached a point in my career where I was, the security stuff was very interesting and I was still interested in it. And I thought about going back to school and getting a master's and a PhD in AI, but quantum computing caught my interest with a friend of mine. And so we've had a podcast for 2 years on quantum computing, much smaller. It's that kind of like keeping yourself, busy That is what I'm talking about. But if anybody's interested in that quixotic topic or just wants to know the basics, that's another resource for people.
Yeah, so, sounds fantastic. We'll tag both those podcasts. We'll tag your company, Pulsar Security, on there as well. And your LinkedIn to connect with you. And one thing, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this, but I was thinking about it during the episode, is I'm a big Leonardo DiCaprio fan. And I think, seriously, if I close my eyes and hear you speak, it sounds like Leo to me. So maybe other people think that, but you take that as a compliment if you'd like. I think he's awesome. So yeah, think that's
no one would mistake us on the street.
you never know. I don't know. With his track record of being with young ladies, I don't know if you sound like you're a married man though. So that they probably wouldn't. Married, yeah,
35 years.
They wouldn't mistake you.
Next month. No. But thank you very much. It's been great talking to you, Eric. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, Patrick Hines, thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll look forward to following your journey and keeping up with you soon.
Thanks. See you soon. Bye.